Vivica Jeannot, welcome back to Pittsburgh. It's so delightful to have you here and on such an exciting world premiere work in your specialty, Baroque music. This is great.
I can't believe it. When I was first approached about this project, it was several years ago now because, of course, COVID interrupted everyone's life, but we began talking about this about 3 or 4 years ago, and I said, this is never going to happen. This is never going to happen, ever. I mean, in the United States, to do a project like this is basically unheard of. And in Pittsburgh, I was thinking, okay, well, yeah, I'll say I'm interested because I love the idea of the project. And I say, well, see what happens. And then, of course, things got postponed. But Carla kept, the Quantum Theater kept saying, yeah, we really want to do it. And they just kept in touch. And then the email came that, yes, we're going to do it. I could not believe it. And I still wake up this every morning and just pinch myself thinking, I cannot believe that I have the opportunity of bringing this music to Pittsburgh, which is a city that I lived in for so many years. I studied with Claudia Pinza for over 20 years, and so Pittsburgh was my base. And I sang several times also with the Pittsburgh Opera. I sang with Chatham Baroque. I sang with David Stock and the Contemporary Music Ensemble. But to bring Brodsky's Idaspe to Pittsburgh is, it's just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal.
Tell me about how the journey of this type of music, because we're not as familiar with this operatically as some of the Aidas and Toscas
right.
that we've mentioned. I had the opportunity to hear you record some of this music, and I love the fact that it is so fluid, that as you are singing it, things come to you and you make it happen.
That's what I think is inspired the passion in me for this music, because it's not like Tosca and not like Bohème, where you have recordings of Maria Callas, and if you don't breathe where Maria Callas breathed, then you're doing it wrong, which I think is completely incorrect. I mean, you look at historically with those pieces, they were changed orchestrally, they were changed also according to the size of the pit. If they were doing in a smaller theater, Donizetti wanted to make his money, Puccini wanted to make his money, and so they would adjust to the artists that they were working with, and they would adjust to the theater that they were working with as well. And now it just seems like from 1750 or 1775 towards modern times, it's just written in stone. And God forbid that you go against Bärenreiter or Ricordi or Peters or whoever put that edition together. And so for me, the Baroque music, when I first started doing it, I worked with René Jacobs, fortunately, because he's one who just worked really viscerally and wanted everything to come from you. Basically, what we're doing in this production of Idaspe also, it all comes from your guts and from your blood and from your emotion. And the Baroque music for me is the closest we have to jazz, because you're never, ever trying to imitate anyone. There was a masterclass with RuPaul on that masterclass series, and he was saying, I don't want to see you imitate somebody else's drag queen. I want to see the best your drag queen. I want to see who you are. And that's exactly what we do, because it's splendid. I sing a repertoire that's sung by countertenors, that's sung by mezzos, that's sometimes sung by sopranos, and there's never any competition in this. It's not like I'm going to do the best. I'm going to do me. And we sing covers no matter what we're doing. If we're singing Aida Tosca, whatever, it's a cover, basically. We're not bringing anything new. So I always say, when I hear you covering maybe a Queen song, Freddie Mercury or David Bowie, I am not interested in your imitation of Freddie Mercury or of David Bowie. I want to hear what that song, what that moment means to you with your past and your history and your baggage. And so that's exactly what we do in the Baroque. It's all based on human emotion and archetypal situations, being in love, things that everyone can identify with, being in love with someone who doesn't love you back, being in conflict, being in war, being in trauma. It's a lot of trauma. And so, again, that difference between trauma being an aggressive act towards you or a challenge that you can step forward into as well as a character. And musically, yeah, that wandering that you heard through the piece, it's structurally, it's there, it's a structure harmonically. And within that structure, especially in this music of Broski, you as an artist have the freedom of wandering and filling and looking and hearing and feeling and touching. And every single time I sing one of these pieces, it's completely different because I see different things, I hear different things in the accompaniment. What we heard today, of course, is with a very limited group. It's a very small group. We'll have the full orchestra then when we're in performances at the Byam. And again, that adds more color, more dimension. But it's fascinating for me also to do these recordings with a small group because you do hear different colors, and every instrumentalist is a soloist. Even when you get the whole orchestra together, everyone is a soloist. And so it's such a collaborative project. And we have this luxury here with Quantum, and with Claire van Kampen, who's doing the stage direction, really coming at it from a theatrical point of view. So I think that's going to transmit very strongly to the audience as well, even if you're not familiar with the music. But by the same token, filling it with this Baroque music and with the stylistic qualities, we have amazing artists in this production. So I think it's a win-win situation. I hope everybody opens up to coming out and hearing something that it's really there's nowhere else you're going to hear this.
It's almost otherworldly.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's otherworldly, but the one thing about Baroque, well, the inesima, the millionth thing that I love about Baroque music is that it also transmits, because it's an archetypal situation of human emotion, human conflict, human love, emotion, everything, it transfers very well in time as well. So we're not doing a production that's based in the 1700s or earlier, because the story is actually based on a conflict that would have been even earlier than that. It will be in the 1960s, but again, it's something that's timeless. It's timeless, and I think audiences will be able to really identify with the emotions and the story, as we artists are now being able to identify personally with the characters that we're portraying.
Tell me a little bit about your character and the story, the fact that it is taking place in the 60s.
My character is Dario. And it's interesting. My whole life basically is playing Dario.
Vivica as Dario, Dario as Vivica.
Well, it's interesting because it kind of started also singing Cenerentola. Cenerentola of Rossini was Cinderella. That was one of the operas that I sang here twice at the Pittsburgh Opera, actually. And it's that kind of character that developed actually more in the Baroque times, in the 1700s. It's a very altruistic character, someone who has a very solid belief system, is young, is not completely in charge of their life. They're an adolescent who is growing into what will be their mature function in society and life. And so he's a young guy. He's been taken away from Persia, or in the actual story Persia. What we're doing is we're setting it in southern Italy in this production. He's been taken away anyway from his homeland in order to save him from, there was a political conflict at that time. He would have been the heir to the governmental political position in his homeland. And there was a plot to take his life, and so he was saved by someone, taken away, and grew up in another country, in another place anyway, region. And he's now coming back to his homeland, kind of like Malcolm in La Donna del Lago, Tancredi, also all of these. That's why I say this music is so exciting, because it informs everything that maybe we're familiar with in the early 1800s. Very similar character and storyline. And he comes back because his first love, Mandane, who's the daughter of the boss where he grew up, has been captured, kidnapped, and taken to his homeland. And with the idea of the boss of his homeland marrying her to create peace. And Dario doesn't agree with this, so he's gone to save her. And in the whole then storyline, there a whole lot of other conflicts come up that maybe in his best interest to allow the boss of where he came from to marry Mandane in order to generate this world peace that he's interested in. He's very altruistic, and he's willing to sacrifice his own interests for the good of the others. I think that's Dario in a nutshell.
This whole thing has been in the works, as you mentioned, for quite a few years, but the fact that Claire Van Kampen and Chatham Baroque have gotten together to sort of create this original score is from Broski's original opera. What a task.
Yeah, again, that's something that I'm very used to. Now in the digital age, anybody can go online and find the manuscript of Idaspe of Broski. I did it. I found the original libretto also, and so the source materials are now very widely available to anybody who's interested in looking and seeing, and I encourage that also. You go to imslp.com mm-hmm. and you just do a search for Idaspe and the score will come up. You can download it and you can look at what musicians worked with in the 1700s. Whereas before you had to get an appointment at the library where the original source material was housed, put on white gloves, be taken down into the basement, have the manuscript brought out to you. I did that in the 90s when I was researching for Hasse, another mm-hmm. composer that I love. And that was emotional because there's also a list of who has touched that manuscript since it's been in that collection. And there's some amazing names, and most of them are from the 1920s. So, you know, it's emotional to look and see the writing, the human traces that are available to us of the history of these pieces. And what I do myself, I have on my computer, I have a software, music writing software. So when I download or I get a copy of this manuscript, I put it in my computer, and that's exactly what Chatham Baroque has done, except on a grand scale. Three-act opera is very time-consuming to put into that wonderful and very helpful software, but it's still a lot of manual work and mental work. And then all of us participated also in kind of making corrections, looking through, because, again, a copyist in the 1700s, he's interested in getting that material out to the musicians, and there are mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that I love. You can always take into consideration that what is in the manuscript is not necessarily correct. And you're not allowed to do that with Mozart's Così fan tutte. It's written that way, it will be that way, thou shalt sing it that way. And so I love the hands-on, it feels like you're playing in a sandbox, it feels like you're playing in the mud, you're getting dirty, you're getting the music all over you, you're sweating, you're inhabiting these pieces.
Well, that's what I saw when you were recording. First of all, I love the fact that you were literally singing from one page of music, and all of the notes came from that one tiny little page of music, and it was going on and on. But I loved the involvement of not only your body, your arms, everything that was going on, but your breath, and almost the sighing and crying that you created in the piece.
Great. Yeah, I get a little Mariah Carey when I'm doing the recordings. Especially, this wasn't a coloratura piece, but when I get into the coloratura pieces, I start my right hand starts going, and I'm just twiddling away physically as well. But I love that. I think you get a kind of a high like an athlete does from running marathon. You know, whenever you talk to somebody who's come back from their morning run, they've got those the endorphins running, and it's such a physical and mental flow for me being in this music. I love that because I've always seen things with music. My father, when I would go to bed, my bedtime was like 9 o'clock, and he was a professor of biochem, and so he would go up to their room and be correcting papers. And while he was correcting papers, he was listening always to Bruckner, Mahler, Mozart, all of the great recordings, Bernstein and Scholti and Bruno Walter, everything. Didn't listen to much opera, but all of these symphonic pieces I had while I was going to sleep, I was riding the back of this giant, huge Black Panther into these gulfs, kind of, you know, what we then saw in some of the movies that you get into this Avatar kind of thing, you know? And I've always had that kind of vision when I'm singing. And I love opera in this circumstance where we are building our world together with Claire and together with our colleagues. what was always challenging for me was when I used to do a lot of Barber of Seville's. I would be singing in the Berlin Staatsoper, I would be singing in Munich Staatsoper, in Vienna Staatsoper, and you would have 20 minutes of rehearsal just to learn the blocking, to learn the movement, and it was like Arthur Murray School of Opera. And you could almost see the grooves in the stage where Friederike von Stade had put her left foot, where then Jenny Larmour had put her left foot, where then Joyce Donato had put her left foot, and that's where you put your left foot, God help you. I mean, really. And you just kind of went through the motions a lot. You tried to fill it as much as possible, but most of the time there's a production of Ruth Berghaus of Barbieri di Siviglia at the Staatsoper in Berlin that's 1 year older than I am. And
it continues.
And it's every time you go into the theater, there's an announcement, welcome to the 1,486th performance of Ruth Berghaus's Barbieri di Siviglia. I don't think they even say Rossini. It's just Ruth Berghaus's. Yeah. And so, and if you ask for a reason, why am I making this physical movement with my hands, nobody can tell you. They just say that's the way it was done, that's the way it shall be done. So I enjoyed, when I started doing more concerts, being able to be the one just doing arias, but deciding, okay, I'm talking about a bird. I want the bird to be in an oak tree. I want the oak tree to be just down left of me. And the bird is going to then, in measure seven, it's going to fly over to the right. And I'm going to follow that bird. And there it is. And now it's in a birch. And it's just twiddling away. And the light is just so. It's this time of the day. The sun is just going down. There's a little bit. You make your own scenery. And it changes every time you do a concert. It's what you want as an artist. And I am so convinced that if I see that, the audience comes into me and into my world. And I love that feeling of being able to be the hostess and have
with the mostest.
Have people come into my image, my world. I love that.
You mentioned your father correcting papers and with the music there. What was it that started your love of music? How did you find your voice?
I was one of the luckiest people in the world to be born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. As today, the airspace over Russia was closed, and so all artists coming from Europe going to the eastern countries, so Japan or South Korea, Hong Kong, they had to go over the pole. All the airplanes stopped in Anchorage to refuel, and then they continued on. And we had the most fabulous people like Quantum Theater who convinced artists to stay on in Alaska. There's also the curiosity factor. A lot of people had never been to Alaska, and they thought, well, why not stop over? Let's see what it is. And do concerts in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, where I grew up. And so I was exposed to Martha Graham was there with her company. Cab Calloway was there. Empire Brass was there. Modern Jazz Quartet. Peter Paul and Mary. Peter Schickley. I mean, everybody came. And I got a ticket because we were in Fairbanks, Alaska. If I had grown up in Chicago, I never would have been able to afford that. I never would have had the opportunities that I did. And then in Alaska also, our winter is 9 months long. We get down to 40 below. Or, you know, or colder. We wake up in darkness. We go to work in darkness, school in darkness. At that time, we didn't have many windows also because windows lose heat. And triple pane windows are very expensive and didn't exist when I was growing up. So we live a lot of our lives inside and in darkness with very little natural light. And arts for us was really like food and water and air. And people in Alaska like living away from other people, having their independence, but then there's a desperate need for coming together and socializing and being with other people. And so the theater for us, I remember my mom saying that when they moved up in 1948, there was already a theater group at the university for the community, and they just got together and everybody took a part for a couple of pages and they read through The Tempest or they read through whatever, everything, anything they could get their hands on, they would just read through everybody taking a part, and then they would change parts, and somebody else would. So this participation, the arts being for us, for you, it's not an elitist thing. It's not something that you have to have a talent for. you have to have a passion for it. And if you have a passion, you are welcome. We have a sing it, we did anyway. I haven't been in Alaska now, you know, living and being constantly in Alaska for quite a while. But we had an honest to God sing it yourself Messiah. Everybody who walked into that church had their own score of the Messiah. Everybody picked a part. The soloists were soloists that had done an audition, but they were all people from the community. The orchestra was orchestra from the community. And we sang that Messiah. I mean, and I just, the arts is for me. The arts is for you. The arts is for everyone. That's what I grew up in a Petri dish.
Great. Vivica, thank you so much for your time. We're so looking forward to this wonderful, fabulous performance of Idaspe.
Thank you, Anna. It's fantastic to see you again, and it's wonderful to be back in Pittsburgh.